This is the Middle East Report, your connection to truthful reporting on Israel and the Middle East. I'm John Riley. Each week, I help you make sense of what's happening in that region through a biblical lens. Some of the things that we cover include security threats, archaeological discoveries, biblical prophecy, and so much more. Well, there is an ongoing war in Israel, and it's not just in Gaza. You're hearing a lot about the Gaza war, but there is a war in the northern part of Israel that you need to know about. You need to know about that war and so many other war fronts that are going on there in the land of Israel to help us make sense of what's happening there. We have with us directly from the land of Israel, Lieutenant Colonel Sarit Zahavi. She is the founder and president of ALMA, a nonprofit and independent research and education center specialized in Israel's security challenges on its northern border. Now, she has briefed hundreds of groups and forums ranging from U.S. senators, congressmen and women, and politicians to senior journalists and visiting VIP groups in Israel and overseas. And her organization provides updates focusing on Lebanon, Syria, and Israel's national security challenges. She has served 15 years in the Israeli Defense Forces, specializing in military intelligence. And Sarit holds an MA in Middle East Studies from Ben Gurion University. Sarit, thank you for joining us today here on the Middle East Report directly from the land of Israel.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Sarit, tell us about your organization, what you do there in the land of Israel. I want you to also tell us about your family, you know, how close you live to the northern border there to Lebanon.
So a few years ago, I established a nonprofit organization under the name of ALMA. ALMA's mission is to create a reliable and up-to-date platform of knowledge about Israel's security challenges on the northern borders. I'm not hiding my agenda. I'm an Israeli, and I want people to know what's happening here, what we are facing, what's the challenge look like. Now, I did that before the war started, but of course, now we are actually experiencing everything I talked about, and in a sense, it's even worse than what I talked about because the situation here is very different than anything we could imagine. I myself live 9 kilometers from the border with Lebanon with my family. And I'll just give you a short overview of today. It's a good example. We had two anti-tank attacks that damaged homes in the Upper Galilee, which is 1 hour drive from where I am. Then my neighbors filmed interception of their drones above Tzfat, which is half an hour from where I live. And they were on their way to the Golan Heights. Then there was interception of 2 drones in Nahariya, which is 20 minutes from where I live. And 2 more drones fell. We don't know exactly in the same area. We don't know exactly what's the damages yet. And this is just in the past few hours. Just an example to how we live here. All of this is heard from my home, everything that is happening around us, all the blasts and the drones and the jets, an IDF attack in Lebanon, and Hezbollah's attacks against Israel. And that's the daily reality here since October 8th, since Hezbollah opened the northern front against Israel.
Hezbollah opened that northern front on Israel on like October 8th, that was the day after the slaughter of Jewish people there in Israel. And they have continued those attacks on Israel there in the northern area of the country. And, you know, you mentioned this is going on day after day. We're not talking about 1 or 2, you know, rockets and drones that come across. We're talking about dozens and dozens that come across. I have something on my phone that gives me the alerts, you know, from communities that are experiencing rocket attacks. And I get dozens of these every single day, Sarit, that are coming in affecting families there, at least the families that are left there in the northern area of Israel because of this Hezbollah attack that's going on in Israel.
It affects all families. First, it's important to emphasize that Hezbollah on October 7th had the same capability to carry out what Hamas had done, and even in a more professional way. Hamas actually replicated a Hezbollah offensive plan for the north. So for us, people that are living here, we are under existential threat that if Hezbollah will keep these capabilities or will be able to recover the capabilities that were damaged by the IDF in the past few months, it will execute another massacre. Hezbollah eventually didn't join full scale and carried out another massacre because most of the communities became empty very quickly. Why would it invade to empty communities? The IDF was very quickly deployed up north. And the bottom line is that Hezbollah wanted its own campaign, not to be part of a Hamas campaign. And that's why it opened what we call a low-scale war. But as you said, this low-scale war is, when you live here, you know, it's not exactly low-scale. And we also see an increase in the amount of attacks in the past month. I can say that since this war started, we had more than 2,000 attacks on the northern front of Israel, most of them by Hezbollah, most of them from Lebanon. And this includes UAVs, anti-tank missiles that cannot be intercepted by Iron Dome, and barrages of rockets that are spread everywhere. And in the beginning of the summer here, they cause huge fires. We have tens of thousands of dunams that were burned. We have communities that more than half of the community is destroyed. And all of that together is bringing us to the situation that 60,000 Israelis that were evacuated from the border area at the beginning of the war cannot go back to their homes because it's constant fire.
Well, the families cannot go back. And, you know, you mentioned that the attacks are becoming more and more frequent. And what I'm reading and hearing, you know, from Israel is that, you know, these drones, these UAVs that are coming into Israel are going further into Israel, and that Hezbollah is sending its rockets further into Israel. And you can help me out with this, because one report that I saw, and I don't know if it's accurate or not, one drone actually reaching the Jezreel Valley. And for those of you who are listening, that's kind of a very flat area there, a beautiful area of Israel. And it's quite a ways away from the northern part of Israel. Did that actually happen? And are things just heating up to a point where they're just shooting these rockets and drones further and further into Israel, trying to test Israel?
Yes, definitely. Not only it happened, it is not the first time that it happened. You're talking about an incident from last week that this drone was intercepted above the Lower Galilee. But there was another incident a few weeks before that the drones actually succeeded in taking off a huge balloon of surveillance that we had there, that was part of our, we put it this way, intelligence array. And Hezbollah was trying to blind us. I'm not sure they succeeded, but they succeeded in taking off this balloon. And this was about 40 kilometers from the borderline. I agree that in general, we see in the past few weeks more attacks that are outside of the areas which are evacuated, getting closer to me. I live 9 kilometers from the border. And this is a problem because it affects the life of the people that are still here, as you said. It make more people affected from the war. And this is a trend that we'll have to look whether it continues or intensifies, because, you know, IDF is also attacking Hezbollah targets on the other side of the border. But also over there, IDF is very careful in a sense that most of its attacks were to the areas which are very close to the border, which means actually that it's inefficient in truly damaging the capabilities of Hezbollah to carry out these attacks against Israel. As you can see, they continue and even intensified.
Well, we're talking about Hezbollah, and those of you who are listening to the Middle East Report are like, okay, I don't even know who Hezbollah is and, you know, what they're doing there in Lebanon. Just really quickly, Sarit, can you just refresh our memory on what and who Hezbollah is and what they are there in Lebanon?
Hezbollah is a proxy militia of Iran. It is also a political party in Lebanon, local political party in Lebanon that is a member of the Lebanese government and the Lebanese parliament. And it is also a social movement that provides the services and the needs of its own base and population of the Shiite Muslims of Lebanon. So basically what's important to emphasize is that Hezbollah is not an external militia that took over Lebanon. It's a local militia that took over Lebanon, using the population, the Shiite base, the Shiite Muslim base as a human shield. The munition of Hezbollah is hidden inside the homes or under the homes of these people. And it gets the support of these people because eventually they are dependent in what Hezbollah is giving them, whether it's finance services, medical services, educational services, whatever. And also, since Hezbollah is that entrenched in this society, it is indoctrinating the values of the Islamic Revolution of Iran, meaning that actually the main goal, the end goal of Hezbollah, is to make Lebanon an Islamic state under the values of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Loyalty to the supreme leader of Iran, martyrdom, resistance to anything that represents Western values. And that's why this war is actually not Israel-Hamas war or Israel-Hezbollah's war. This is the Iranian war against the state of Israel, which is viewed by the Iranian Ayatollahs as the long arm of the West in the Middle East.
Well, we need to talk about Iran. I mean, and you just mentioned Iran. Of course, several weeks ago, Iran shooting 320 missiles, ballistic missiles, drones into Israel, all of that being repelled by Israel with some help from some others like the United States and others. But Iran is right at the center of everything that is going on there in that part of the world. And, you know, recently the Biden administration, you know, they said, well, Israel, you should not go to a large-scale war in Lebanon because that's going to draw in Iran and it's going to become a regional. So what I want you to do, Sarid, is to talk about Iran and the connection. And then if you'll just respond a little bit to maybe what is being said out there that you all should not go into a larger war to take care of this problem of Hezbollah.
Look, in the past decade, the Middle East changed dramatically. And I think this is very difficult to understand also for us Israelis. In the past decade, Iran succeeded in cultivating proxy militias all over the Middle East. While before that, it was mainly focused on Hezbollah in Lebanon. The way that the Houthis walked through in the past few years, becoming a true threat in the Red Sea, and what we saw with regard to the Iraqi militias that were attacking American soldiers in Iraq and Syria, and now, by the way, they are trying to attack Israel again and again and again. And what we see in Lebanon, and also they try to smuggle munition into the West Bank, munition and money into the West Bank. All of that is part of a major campaign that the Iranian planned under the name Unification of Fronts, meaning they wanted to create a multi-front campaign against the state of Israel, using all these proxy militia against it. What we didn't understand is that they didn't necessarily mean to use all of them at the same day, at the same time, at the same way. And that's why what we see today is that all these proxy militias are involved in this campaign, but in different ways and different scales. To the question about solving the problem, first I must say that every Israeli understands that another war in the northern front here is not a walk in the park. Hezbollah is much more experienced and because it participated in the civil war in Syria against the rebels. It is much more equipped. It has 10 times more missiles and rockets and drones comparing to Hamas. And it's going to be a challenge to, and a lot of, it's going to be messy to have another war here. The question is, what's the alternatives? And I'm saying that clearly as an Israeli, any alternative that will bring me true security, not fictional security, any alternative, for example, if we talk about the diplomatic arrangement that, you know, United States or Britain or France are trying to promote, we need a diplomatic arrangement that will deal with the capabilities of Hezbollah. Because on the level of intentions, we understand that Hezbollah wants the destruction of the state of Israel. So we cannot afford a situation that Hezbollah will be able to preserve its capabilities, fooling us again, hiding between civilians and inside the civilian infrastructure of Lebanon. And then the initiative to massacre Israelis from the Northern Front will be in the hands of Hezbollah. Those days are over. And now any solution whatsoever should deal with these capabilities and make sure that we are secured. This is a matter of life or death for me and my family, as simple as that. War for us Israelis is the last option. But if we'll have to, and this would be the only way to deal with these capabilities, we'll do that. If we will be able to reach something sufficient in a different way, maybe even more attacks, I personally think that we can execute more attacks against Hezbollah below the full-scale war that everybody's talking about. I'm not sure for 100% that it will prevent the war, but it's worth trying.
We're talking to Lieutenant Colonel Sarit Zahavi, the founder and president of ALMA, a nonprofit independent research and education center specializing in Israel security challenges on the northern border. And you can reach out to Sarit, israel-alma.org, israel-alma.org. And, you know, a few moments ago, Sarit, you talked about a potential diplomatic solution there, you know, between Israel and Hezbollah there in the northern area. And you guys had that not long ago, but Hezbollah broke that. And help us who are listening today to understand, because Hezbollah is in a part of Lebanon that they're not supposed to be in. You know, this is an area where that was supposed to be cleared out of Hezbollah, and yet they've kind of moved back in closer to the Israeli border. Am I right on this, or am I missing something? And for somebody who's listening, maybe you can just kind of bring it down to their level of what's going on. We're talking about diplomatic solutions. It hasn't worked.
You are completely accurate. Completely accurate. There was a United Nations Security Council resolution in 2006 that ended the previous war. And due to this resolution, Hezbollah was not supposed to be in South Lebanon in a distance of up to 25 kilometers from the Israeli border. The monitoring mechanism was all about UNIFIL, United Nations Interim Force to Lebanon, and the Lebanese army. But the bottom line is that it never happened. Hezbollah never respect this resolution. And that's why I said that I am not interested in another fictional resolution. I am interested in something solid that will truly take care of my security. Part of that means a monitoring, an effective monitoring mechanism. To tell you the truth, I don't believe that Hezbollah will ever accept something effective. But we are willing to try, but we are not willing to try for 17 years, you know, for endless time. This should be something very specific, limited in a short time to make sure that Hezbollah is disarmed in those areas and is not capable of massacring Israelis, as simple as that. As long as we enable it to preserve its capabilities to massacre Israelis. And, you know, I hear funny stuff like they will be pushed back 8 kilometers from the border. Well, how long does it take to drive 8 kilometers?
Well, Hezbollah, honestly, as much as we want to believe, is not going to accept to being de-armed, because Hezbollah is being run by Iran. Going back to Iran, Sarit, if you disarm Hezbollah, which isn't going to happen, then, you know, you're doing that to Iran, and Iran's not going to let that happen. Talk about the Iran connection. Now, we mentioned that, you know, briefly just a few moments ago, but talk again about the Iran connection and why that is so concerning. I mean, we know what they did several weeks ago with, you know, this massive attack on Israel.
I think the biggest question mark for us Israelis is what's the ticking clock of the Iranians? What do I mean? We know that the elections in the United States are a ticking clock for Israel. United States, by the way, I'm not sure which whether it depends on administration, but the United States is interested to end the war before elections. Israel is interested to bring the people back home. In Israel, the school year starts, you know, September 1st. Israelis that live in up north demand the Israeli government to give them answers where their children are going to study in September 1st, whether they're going to be back in their homes or they will study somewhere else. What's the ticking clock of Iran? What's the deadline of Iran to massacre Israelis and to try to completely collapse the state of Israel? We don't know that, whether it's years or months or 2 years, we don't know that. And it's a big question because, for example, okay, if the reason that this campaign was opened at this timing is not only the progress of the normalization process between Israel and Saudi Arabia, but maybe also the progress of the Iranian nuclear program. So it is clear that what Iranians would try to do is to draw the attention from the Israeli attention and maybe even the American attention from Iran itself to elsewhere, to Lebanon, to Gaza, whatever. I think there are a lot of question marks around here, but something... it's very clear this is an Iranian campaign that is using the proxies in the Middle East. And sometimes when Israel is targeting the Iranian presence in the Middle East, the person who was killed in Damascus, that Iran retaliated with this attack of 300 missiles and drones, he was the Iranian commander for the Northern Front. By the way, not only in the past 8 months, he was the Iranian commander for the Northern Front of Israel, with Israel, like between Israel and Lebanon and Israel and Syria, in the past, around 10, 15 years at least. And he was killed in Damascus in an attack that was attributed to Israel. And then Iran responded with launching of cruise missiles and drones. The encouraging thing in this incident is that Israel learned that at the end of the day, international community and regional countries are willing to come and help with defense. And all of us together succeeded in intercepting most of the missiles and the drones that were launched to Israel that night. Simply also because they were launched from 2,000 kilometers away from us, so we had enough time to deal with them, in opposed to what we are experiencing here, 9 kilometers from Hezbollah. But... you know, it gave me hope that maybe soon international community will also be willing to join us in the offensive part. Because nuclear Iran is not just Israel's problem. It's a global threat. And this is how it should be dealt, like a global threat. Now, one last thing around that, which is important. Reaching an agreement doesn't matter whether it's Iran or Hezbollah or whoever player here in the Middle East, is not the goal. It can't be the goal. The goal is reaching to security. And if we reach an agreement, we must make sure that this agreement is implemented by the Iran. So the goal should be the implementation of the agreement, not just reaching to an agreement, because we were fooled again and again and again by reaching to different agreements here.
Well, Sarit, that has been proved over and over again by agreements that, Israel has been, I think, forced into agreeing to just to try to, you know, have peace there. Well, we talked about a lot of different things going on there in Israel. And of course, I want everybody who's listening right now to please pray for Israel, pray for the Jewish people, pray for the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces. They have a lot going on there right now. There's a lot of things happening politically there in the country of Israel as well, and so much happening. And Sarit, I do appreciate everything that you do with all the education that you give, your expertise in what's happening there security-wise, the challenges. I always like to ask this question: how can people who are listening right now, who love the Jewish people, love the land of Israel, what can they practically do to help you? I mean, they're thousands and thousands of miles away from what's going on there in the conflict.
The best thing is to spread the word. We all see what's happening in the campuses in the United States. Students don't have enough knowledge about what's going on here. They don't know anything about the Northern Front. They don't know anything about the Iranian involvement and Hezbollah. And all they focus on is the Palestinian issue. They don't know too much of geography. And I think the only way to fight this is to spread the word and educate them that there is more than what they are familiar with. And I truly believe in people. I truly believe that once they are educated to learn what's truly happening here and the fact that we are dealing with terrorist groups over here that are led by the Ayatollah dictatorship of Iran, maybe they will change their point of view and they will join us in the fight, in the justified fight against terror rather than protesting against us.
Saree, thank you for those final words here on the Middle East Report. And I hope you're right that things can change on our college campuses, especially with our young people who are not informed and don't understand the geography. And then, of course, we've got all of our woke college campuses and professors who are teaching all of this stuff that is just completely wrong when it comes to Israel and what's going on in the Middle East. So a lot happening there. I want to encourage those of you listening to the Middle East Report to connect with Sarit and her organization. You can do that when you visit israel-alma.org. That's israel-alma.org. And I also want to remind you that you can download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcast. We're on all the major podcast platforms out there. So check it out. Just search for the Middle East Report and you'll find me. And of course, you can find me at afr.net as well. One final note on today's Middle East Report. I want to encourage you and your family to be involved in the Ten Commandments Speech Challenge that is going on right now. It's an opportunity for you and your family to come together and the children in your family to put together a 3.5-minute speech on why the Ten Commandments are important. And you'll get a nice gift if you do that when you upload it. And if you want more details on that, just visit afr.net/Ten Commandments. Spell out Ten Commandments and you'll get more information about the Ten Commandments Speech Challenge, a wonderful opportunity for you and your family to do something very special this summer with the Word of God. So please check that out, afr.net/Ten Commandments. That's the Middle East Report. I'm John Riley. I want to thank you for listening. Let's continue to pray for everything going on there in the land of Israel. So much happening, but praying really does make a difference. Thanks for listening.